Scotch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films 12 Strong, Den of Thieves, Forever My Girl, Mom and Dad, and The Leisure Seeker. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Blade Runner 2049. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Every week I come out and I say I'm going to talk about some news stories. Well, this is one I'm going to just talk about a news story because it's kind of fascinating, and it also shows that I'm a genius. And here is why. When the Me Too movement started, I said, you got to watch out for what's going to happen here, because this is going to morph from going after people that are really totally abusing power in an egregious way, like Harvey Weinstein, and turn into grudges and things that aren't really what they say they are getting put into the media. Now, if you spend any time on Twitter or social media or looking at any sort of film sites, you've seen some stories about Aziz Ansari. Now, if you don't know who that is this little Indian guy. He's a comedian. He's in the TV show Master of None on Netflix. He was also in Parks and Recreation playing Tom Haverford. He's got a recognizable face and a recognizable shtick. And there was a story that broke, and it came out. First of all, you got to consider your sources. And I've been talking about, I talked about this last week when you talk about journalism and quality in journalism, there's a big difference if something's published by the New York Times or the Washington Post, and if it's published by babe.net, which sounds like a porn site, but it's not. Apparently it's a feminist site. But there was a story that came out on babe.net written by this, writer. Her name's, I believe, Katie Way. And the story is about this anonymous woman who goes by the name of Grace, and some people have questioned whether this is actually Katie Way herself writing as an anonymous person, but she's apparently was approached by this woman to tell her this story of this date from hell with Aziz Ansari. And what ended up happening detailed throughout the article. Now, this is not great reporting. This is not sourced, realistic, current event type stuff. This is a gossip rag at this point. This is a he said, she said. This has about as much credibility as something you'd read in the National Enquirer. When you read the story, they say, oh, well, we looked at her phone and she had texted to this number and that happens to be his number. And they were not doing actually deep reporting on this one. But the gist of it is you can go find it. Just search. In fact, you don't even have to know his name. Just search Aziz, A-Z-I-Z, sexual assault. And you'll find this. Basically, this woman goes on and she's in her early 20s and she goes out on a date with him. And they go back to his apartment and they start fooling around. And she's like, oh, I really wasn't sure about it. I was giving nonverbal signals. But throughout the discussion, you're reading this, and at no point does she even say she says no. And at no point does she even get up and leave. They both take off their clothes. They have mutual oral sex. They have plenty of sexual activity. And then it goes further. She's like, oh, well, let's take it slower. I want a back rub, and I want you to stroke my hair. At no point does she say, okay, stop. This isn't happening. Get me a car. And in fact, when she finally does kind of stand up and say, look, I'm not going to have sex with you. He's like, okay. He calls her an Uber and she goes home. And then she goes and talks about it. And it's, oh, well, I was texting my friends and I was really shook up and I realized this was sexual assault. Well, you read this story, it's not sexual assault. And it's funny. If you find this story, you can find Facebook threads and comments. There are people I've seen comment on this story who are actual sexual assault victims saying, look, I was sexually assaulted and this is what happened to me. And I can guarantee you this is not sexual assault. I remember calling this back in October when the Harvey Weinstein stuff was breaking and everybody was going after everybody because it's very hard to prove some sexual assault because there's always the doubt and you have to, if it's going to be criminal, you got to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And it's very hard to prove. So this has become a way to just stick it to somebody and accuse somebody of something. But you know what? This is a perception thing. Yeah, was Aziz Ansari a little bit creepy and maybe a little bit sleazy and, you know, a little aggressive? Sure. But was it assault? No. And like you said, at no point does he force himself on it. I mean, if you look at the guy, too, he's like 98 pounds soaking wet. My 9-year-old could probably push him over. But this has kind of blown up. And there's a lot of people that are pushing back on this, rightfully so, because A, it's not sexual assault, and B, this is a matter of perception, and it's a date gone wrong. And this seems to be her trying to get revenge on a bad date rather than actually doing anything about criminality. And you can scream rape culture all you want, but that's not what this is. And I remember seeing this happen actually a while ago. Remember when the whole iPhone hack happened where like Jennifer Lawrence's naked cell phone pictures were stolen and a bunch of other celebrities? I remember there was a writer from Forbes. It's named Scott Mendelson. And he was talking about, yeah, she does great box office reporting. But Mendelson was saying, this isn't stealing her intellectual property. This is sexual assault because somebody hacked in and got her nude photos. Let's stop calling things sexual assault that are not sexual assault. The reason people do that is because that gets people's attention. Now they've got this amorphous sexual misconduct, which may include sexual assault, but just may include creepy behavior that's not illegal, and some people are like that. An interesting footnote to this is Ashley Banford from CNN Headline News actually did a little piece on this and questioned the reporting of this story and questioned some of the details and questioned the intent of the story. And apparently Katie Way wrote this scathing email back to her and was making fun of her age, making fun of her lipstick, making fun of her clothing and her style, which has nothing to do with the story. And it completely blew up Katie Way's credibility to the point that she was like on TV talking about this. And now she, like, her Twitter account is dead silent. And every day she goes without actually doing a public apology to Ashley Banfield and addressing this after she drew blood, she's losing her credibility. She's not going to work again as a journalist. I wouldn't hire her because this is not, it's crappy source material anyways. It's gossip rag garbage. It's not an actual sexual assault. She's putting herself up as this, well, this is the way the world, this neo-feminism where it's like burn it all down. And that's the way this girl's running her life. And she's blown up her career because of it. But it's an interesting story to see where this thing's gone and how it's blown up. And it's undermining any sort of real movement because this is not Harvey Weinstein level of garbage. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to look at is Early Man, opens on February 16th.
Let's game commence!
We challenge the champions!
A caveman?
A caveman?
A caveman!
You took our home!
If we win, you leave my tribe in peace!
You think you can beat Rael Bronzio? I can help!
If we play this game and beat them at it, we can have our valley back.
Yeah! This is done by Aardman Animation, which of course did Wallace and Gromit. They did Chicken Run, Shaun the Sheep. While they've had some stinkers like Flushed Away, they do some great work, and I'm looking forward to this. I think it looks charming, and I love whenever there's something more than computer-generated animation. It looks like 2018 with Isle of Dogs, and this is going to kind of bring back some awesome animation. We had a kind of a slow animation year last year. There's also Don't Worry, You Won't Get Far on Foot, opening May 11th.
So, John, do you want to tell us about your drinking?
Well, I started drinking when I was 13. I liked it a lot, and I never stopped.
This doesn't just go away. You have to fight with it, or you'll die.
Something really profound just happened to me, man.
Aren't you glad you met us?
John doesn't like us.
Well, of course I like you.
You're crazy.
We like you too.
Makes you get to know me.
This is directed by Gus Van Sant. It's a true story about a man who is in a wheelchair because of alcohol-related accident. Starring Joaquin Phoenix. So I don't know much what to think. This is a very sort of nebulous trailer that they've dropped. It's just almost a teaser more than anything else. It looks like there might be some good performances, but you know, the jury's still out on this one. We'll see as we get closer to the date. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Den of Thieves and Forever My Girl.
Because we can.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews with Den of Thieves. A corrupt cop tries to bring down a team of bank robbers who have targeted the Federal Reserve.
We got a problem. It's a major crime.
Get to know your enemy, boys. Every big-time crew has been busted. These are the guys who took them down.
Sooner or later, they'll need their fix.
Save the plans.
We're trading up.
The Federal Reserve. It's like Fort Knox.
At any one time, there's anywhere between $500 and $800 billion in there. Every millimeter of it covered by cameras, sensors, and motion detectors.
Stand across the street and stare at the building for 2 minutes.
You have security.
Only bank that's never been robbed.
That's why we're going to rob it.
First of all, this is not a remake of Heat. I actually got somebody asking me that on Twitter. They're like, hey, is this a remake or is it just a knockoff? Of course, Heat is a beloved, well-known Michael Mann movie, probably one of his most famous and most revered films. And this one, by Sunday night, you're going to forget about it. Because this is not a remake of Heat. This is just a ripoff. This is either a terrible movie or a brilliant allegory as to what's happened to Gerard Butler's career. There's something about recent heist movies. I remember this reminds me a bit of, what was that movie, Triple Nine, that came out? I think about almost 2 years ago to the day. That was that awful movie about corrupt cops running bank robbing schemes or armored car running, whatever they were doing. And it had a great cast. It had like Chiwetel Ejiofor, and it had Casey Affleck, and it had Woody Harrelson, and it had Anthony Mackie in that movie. And that was terrible. This one has Gerard Butler and Ice Cube's kid, who was in Straight Outta Compton. And that's about it. My biggest problem with this movie is there is not a single likable character in it. All the characters are either straight up bad guys who do bad things and cause the death of innocent people. Or they're good guys kind of trying to do the right thing, but they're such a train wreck in their regular life that they're a horrible character. I'll tell you what's not a good character anymore. The alcoholic cop who's getting a divorce and has corruption issues. We have seen that so many times, it is not original. But no, we always have to have the brooding looks, the smoking the cigarette, the drinking whiskey in the morning kind of character. And that's what Gerard Butler plays. And I like Gerard Butler as an actor. I enjoy watching him in movies like London Has Fallen and Olympus Has Fallen. But boy, has he been in some stinkers. And this is one of them. First of all, the movie's 2.5 hours long. And look, you got to have a good reason to have a movie over 2 hours. And this one does not have a good reason. It is so exhausting. I fell asleep twice in this movie. I haven't fallen asleep twice in a movie since Gods and Generals, which was a release like 15 years ago. And it was this excruciatingly boring Civil War epic that was produced by like Ted Turner. And it was like 3.5 hours long. I fell asleep twice in this movie. It was exhausting. And there's no good element to Gerard Butler's character. And even the bad guys, the thieves, they're trying to almost make them like honorable criminals because they only kill people in uniform. Like they'll kill like a security guard or cops if they have to, but they won't kill innocent civilians, which is odd. That's an odd choice. That really doesn't show great moral choice. That's not something you can get behind as a character. And it opens up with them having a heist go bad and they end up killing the police officers and security guards. And they're like, well, we're cop killers now. I guess we just got to deal with it. And that's how they open up with these characters. And I think they try to make one of the characters somewhat sympathetic, which was, Ice Cube's son. I don't even remember his name. But they don't do a very good job. He's not very well developed. He has a couple scenes, and then he's kind of in the background for the rest of the movie. It's really trying to be Gerard Butler's movie. And then there's this main heist guy that is sort of the anti-hero in this movie. It just doesn't work, and it's sloppily done. They have these, like, extended gun battle in the streets of Los Angeles scenes that just go on forever and at times make no sense. This is an extremely boring, terrible, worthless movie that is no surprise it's opening in the middle of January. And it sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to Forever My Girl. After leaving his fiancée at the altar to make it big as a country music star, a young man returns home to discover that he's a father.
So this is where you work.
I own it. I actually did something with my life after you walked out.
Hey, Mama.
Hi, sweetie.
Hey, I know you. You're that country star my mama listens to. Not really my cup of tea. No offense.
I didn't find out that I was pregnant until a couple weeks after what was supposed to be our wedding day.
What's going on down there, Liam?
Turns out I have a daughter.
Does your halo grow heavy?
I have no right to ask for much here at all, but I want to get to know Billy.
This is moving way too fast.
This was not screened. It's screened for some places, like I think like New York and LA, because there's like a, it's got like a 14% on Rotten Tomatoes heading into the weekend. So there are reviews out there, but this was not widely screened, and there's a reason for that. Generally, Roadside Attractions is in charge of this movie, and generally, if they think they got something good, I'll actually get approached about it. I was never approached about this movie, so it's probably not very good. I had to take a shot of insulin after watching the trailer. It was so cheesy and schmaltzy and saccharine sweet. Now, the most recognizable name in this, to me, I guess Alex Rowe, I guess he's somewhat known. He's a British actor, but he's playing, you know, Southern type in this one. But Jessica Routh, who is best known for kind of making a splash with Happy Death Day just last October, which was actually a great little slasher movie. And she plays his ex-girlfriend, who's his baby mama. But as charming and attractive and as much chemistry as she has on screen with other people, especially in Happy Death Day, she carried that movie. In this one, she's sidelined to this guy. And I'll tell you, this feels like this weird amalgamation of, just from the trailer, feels like a weird amalgamation of a Hallmark Channel movie and a Nicholas Sparks movie with a little bit of, and I don't mean to upset people, but sort of that faith-based filmmaking that goes in there. When I say faith-based film, nothing against the content of a faith-based film, but a lot of faith-based films tend to have this level of cheese. They have this extra layer of cheese, like a lasagna that's really, really stringy. And that's like topping the level of this movie. And it does kind of feel like there was that movie, The Resurrection of Gavin Stone, that came out sometime last year. That kind of followed similar ideas where there was somebody who was famous who goes back to a small town. This is a trope that we see all the time. And he sort of recenters himself and becomes a good person. And I guess that's where this is going, him trying to be a dad. I mean, actually, the little girl in the trailer seems adorable. She seems like she's doing she does a good job in the role. But this movie just looks terrible. I was happy they didn't screen it because I didn't have to waste my time to watch it. Then I went and saw Den of Thieves and, well, who won that battle? Not me. Anyways, they didn't screen it, so Forever My Girl gets a preemptive suck and probably wouldn't raise out of that category if I saw it anyways.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about 12 Strong and Mom and Dad.
Stop it now.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and dive right into 12 Strong. Chris Hemsworth stars in this true story of the first group of U.S. Special Forces who infiltrated Afghanistan after 9/11.
Why? These men follow you.
You take me to the Taliban, I'll show you.
Okay.
We take horses.
50,000 Al-Qaeda fighters,
and yours just an army of 12.
We've just been handed the most important mission in the free world.
If we quit now, what happened back home is going to happen again and again.
Get out.
This is about getting that toehold into Afghanistan. And if you know anything about military history, Afghanistan is notorious for being impossible to invade and occupy. Alexander the Great tried to do so. And the Russians attempted to do it in the 80s, and they had problems. In response to 9/11, to go after the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, who had dug in and has all of their training and weaponry in Afghanistan, in these caves and valleys, the goal was to be able to bomb these locations and these weapons caches. And there's a reason that was very difficult, because it's such a mountainous terrain that you can't go up and you can't go down, because the mountains are so high, you can get on the peak and shoot down any sort of plane up there, and you can get in the valleys, and they can hide stuff in caves. And they were dropping bombs from 30,000 feet in order to do this, but they needed some boots on the ground in order to target these locations. And it's based on a book, so I don't know how actual detail true it is. I've not read it. And I think for the most part, it gets that point across. It managed to make the point that this mission was not easy, had never been done before, and was extremely complex. And so they had to kind of find a way around it. And so they go and they work with the Northern Alliance, which was this really shaky alliance of tribes against the Taliban, but the tribes all hated each other anyways. They link up with this one group and they go in on horseback. And there's parts of it that are actually still kind of confusing. I mean, from a strategic standpoint, they're trying to explain, like, in the one point, and then, like, kind of near the climax, there's this valley with a road that goes through it that's pretty much the only pass, the only way to get from one area to another area of the country, which is where the city was. And they're talking about flanks and north areas and south, and it is very confusing. You just have to know going in that, I am assuming this is accurate, but there's no way to, aside from having the general pull down a map and do like an old 1950s movies and say, well, we need to go through here and there, and this is where we are now, and this, it gets very confusing. But of course, it's also very confusing for the people whose boots are on the ground. These movies tend to have to walk a fine line. Sometimes these movies can get overly flag-wavy and jingoistic. I mean, something like Act of Valor, which I actually kind of enjoyed. I thought Act of Valor was a good movie, but it does get a little bit overdone. Military movies are a challenge in this day and age because they're like making religious movies, because you're dealing with something or someone that people revere. And people can get very triggered that they would worry that they would be either shown as too rah-rah patriotic. I mean, you could do that back in the 50s, but you also can't be too heavy on yourself, being the country. I remember right after 9/11, maybe 10 years after 9/11, there were a whole bunch of movies that were about the war. And there was a lot of ones that were contemplating war versus peace. And those can get really heavy-handed. I've seen movies like The Messenger or Lines for Lambs or Grace is Gone or even what we just had recently with Thank You for Your Service, where they show the situation being overwhelming and that people aren't dealing with it. And that's one of the reasons I loved American Sniper, was because American Sniper showed the dangers of war and the problems of war, but there's a big difference between somebody dealing with the reality of PTSD and coming home and getting treatment and people that are such head cases they can't even put on their clothes. And that's what you saw with stuff like Thank You for Your Service, which was why I personally didn't like that movie. But this one also, like I said, you can get a little bit overly jingoistic with a movie, especially something like this. And it was weird, as I'm watching, there's this old woman sitting next to me, and every time a Taliban fighter got like blown to smithereens, she was kind of clapping. And that's a little uncomfortable, because you are looking and saying these are people that are like just like forced into this from farms. And a lot of these people kind of have no choice, and they end up getting pulled in on a side, and their family's at stake. And the only chance, the only option they have is to fight, and not to defend them either, because it's a war situation and you do have rules of engagement. But this is not a Marvel movie or Star Wars, where you've got the stormtroopers and they all get blown up and you'd be like, yay, because they're nameless, faceless characters that are fodder in a fictional action movie. This is a real life action movie. So the death and destruction is a little bit brushed away, you know, whereas a movie like Hacksaw Ridge, it was gory and bloody and horrifying to watch, but that's combat. And that's also the way Mel Gibson directs. This one kind of pulls back a bit on it and does kind of lean into these sort of Hollywood-ish kind of action moments where you say, well, I don't know, that person would have gotten killed because they're right there in the line of fire and everybody seems to miss them. But overall, I mean, it works for sort of like a mid-January action pick, and it also shows an interesting strategic element that a lot of people didn't know about. It does get a little corny at times with the general from the Northern Alliance. He does tend to spout this Yoda-esque sage wisdom that seems a little bit false at times. But overall, I thought it was an entertaining film. So 12 Strong kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Mom and Dad. In a peaceful suburb, parents are suddenly compelled to murder their own children.
What is the rush today? It's like you're waiting for a buffet.
What's going on? Is that McKenna's mom?
Multiple reports are now coming in of parents murdering their own children.
Listen to me. We have to get out of the house before Mom and Dad come home. Dad?
This movie is directed by Brian Taylor. He's best known for the directing team of Neville Dean and Taylor, who did the Crank movies. And they're best known for sort of high-octane, crazy, intense action. Now, this is Brian Taylor's first solo gig. He doesn't have Neville Dean with him. But you can still see his influence. So the movie has an interesting premise. I really actually do, because it's based on a natural phenomenon called savaging. And it's mostly seen in swine, where the mother will suddenly attack and kill her young. And nobody knows exactly why this happens and why it happens in certain populations, whether it's something that is a genetic response, whether it's an evolutionary response. Nobody knows why it happens, but it is a phenomenon that happens. And so he uses that as the setup. And it reminds me in a certain way, kind of like of The Happening, where you have some sort of defense mechanism disappearing in your brain and then a compulsion to do just that. I mean, you have Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair play the parents. And actually, Selma Blair, I think, is quite good in the movie. She has a really dry and dark wit, so she's able to make it kind of a horror comedy. Nicolas Cage just does his over-the-topness from page one. The problem is that it's actually this brilliant idea that is then squandered as a home invasion movie, because it turns into this brother and sister trying to hide from their parents, trying to kill them. But at one point he swerves into something very interesting where there's this news footage where they're interviewing a guy and he's talking about having just killed his kids. And he talks about it with such clarity and peace that you're like, that's a fascinating thing to explore. That's a brilliant, interesting character thing. And it seems that in this movie, it's just something clicks that parents want to destroy their kids. But it's not like a temporary phenomenon. Or when it does it, it's holistically through their body that they completely aren't understanding and it fits in their worldview. This is a brilliant idea that could have been explored, but he squanders it into just this home invasion type of movie of hide in the closet while mom and dad try and kill you. And so at that point, it then just gets tedious near the end. But I'm being really nice, and I want to say it kind of rocks. Just barely.
It kind of rocks.
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Leisure Seeker and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Blade Runner 2049.
Shake that.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's do our final movie review, and that is The Leisure Seeker. This one actually is technically a 2017 movie. I don't even think it... I think it opens in limited release this week. It expands, I'm sure, later on. But a limited release just this week, Donald Sutherland and Helen Mirren star as an elderly couple with dementia and cancer, respectively, who take one final road trip in their old RV.
Kids, we won't be gone long.
You know that Dad can't drive in his condition.
Where are we? We're not home.
No, hon. This is Pennsylvania.
What the dickens are we doing in Pennsylvania?
This is just something I really need to do with your father.
My husband suffers from memory loss, and I'm afraid he might just wander off and get hurt.
John!
Hop aboard.
All that?
Promise me something. Don't leave me.
Oh, I promise.
It's an interesting story behind this. It's a little bit personal for me. I tend to watch these screeners a lot of times. I'll watch them late at night, and my wife's a teacher, and I got kids in school. So kind of like the afternoon and evening is chaos when they come home, and if they're doing things and we're making dinner and everything. So sometimes I don't get to watch a movie until later, and I stay up late watching a film. We ate dinner really late that night, and I said to my wife, I said, I got to put this in. I have to watch this. You're more than welcome to watch it. And so that usually happens, and sometimes she gets into a movie, and sometimes she doesn't. So I put in The Leisure Seeker, and doggone it, if she doesn't watch the whole thing. I mean, she stayed up like till 1:30 in the morning watching this thing when she should have been in bed hours before. And there's a reason, because we do feel a personal connection to this. My wife and I, neither of us traveled much as kids. My dad hated traveling, and my mom enjoyed it to a degree, but it was a hotel type thing for her. And my wife's family just never traveled. When my wife and I got old enough and we had our own family and we had our own kids, we started traveling everywhere. We've driven literally across the United States. I've driven coast to coast. One summer I drove all the way to Alaska and then drove all the way down to Key West. I think there's only like two states I've not been to. One of them's like Rhode Island, because you only go to Rhode Island if you're going to Rhode Island. You don't go through it. Our children have been to over 40 states, but we've spent weeks on the road. We've slept in cars. We've slept in tents. We've slept in hotels. We've slept in dive motels. So we're real road worry kind of people. And my wife and I always talk about wanting, you know, when we retire, we want to just get our own little RV and just drive around the country and then go visit our kids in the different cities where they live. And so this is sort of kind of what we wanted to do for our retirement. Now, I don't want to wait till I have dementia and my wife has cancer for this to happen. But as we're watching the movie, that's the story. It's this older couple, and they're at the end of their lives, and they rely on each other, but they still fight and they bicker, but they do truly, truly love each other. And they sometimes act a little unreasonable. And especially if you've ever dealt with, my grandfather had Alzheimer's. And so if you've ever dealt with somebody with dementia, it's a real challenge, because sometimes you don't know who they are or who they think you are from day to day. And it can be heartbreaking. And it is not an easy thing to do. So my wife and I, both of us, and we're watching this separately, are thinking, God, we could see ourselves in this situation. And at the end of the movie, I said to my wife, I go, why'd you stayed up watching the whole thing? She's like, because that's us, is kind of what she said. And it was real charming. And so this movie hits me in a very personal moment, because, I mean, my wife, we're middle-aged, so we're stampeding towards that retirement right now. Now, with all that said, this is a charming movie, because Helen Mirren and Donald Sutherland, both great actors. I love them both. And they both do such unique stuff with what they have. It's a real balanced movie between the two of them and their interpersonal relationship. And it shows what it's like to be people who are no longer anywhere close to their prime, who still each love each other and rely on each other, but can also be thorns in each other's side. And they never, it's not this argumentative, you know, acidic movie. Like, you remember that movie, August, Osage County, where the entire family hated each other and I would never go to holiday dinner. These are like your own grandparents, where you could go and see them, and you know, while they fought, sometimes they still loved each other. And that's the real charm of this movie. And then you see what kind of jerks their kids are, because their kids don't let them be themselves. I liked it a lot more than I ever thought I would. So I'm going to have to say The Leisure Seeker totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's take a look at the box office just really quick. Of course, Jumanji won again last week, which is impressive, because, you know, it's in the fourth week of release and it's number one. It was over Star Wars, but Star Wars is dropping, but, you know, $600 million is nothing to sneeze at. The Post did quite well, making $23 million over the weekend. The Greatest Showman still continues to do extremely well. The Greatest Showman's a little movie that everyone's going to forget did so well, because it's come in under Star Wars and Jumanji consistently, but it's come in there consistently, and that's why it's going to end up being a hit. The Commuter and Paddington 2 were playing a little soft, and I think that's because maybe they're just getting to the end of the Liam Neeson. We've had 10 years of Liam Neeson action movies in January, and Paddington 2 is so British, I think that there's some people that don't feel the charm. Don't worry, Paddington's an international hit. It's doing very well overseas, so its soft box office in America is not going to impact whether or not they have more Paddington movies. And then Proud Mary kind of was disappointing with just under $12 million. That's actually pretty small. And I think that has more to do with the fact that they buried this movie. You know, this week, I think 12 Strong has a good shot, mainly because these kind of movies tend to do well in January, the sort of the post-9/11 military action movies. Stuff like Lone Survivor, American Sniper, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, that played a little soft, but still, this seems to be the time of year to release those movies. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week, I'm going to be talking about the groundbreaking still and very effective film, Blade Runner 2049, which is out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Ryan Gosling stars as a replicant Blade Runner who discovers an incredible secret about Rick Deckard from the original film.
Every leap of civilization was built off the back of slaves. Replicants are the future, but I can only make so many. I have the lock, and he has the key. I think I found him.
That's not possible. If this gets out, we've bought ourselves a war.
When this movie first came out, when they screened it for us, I remember leaving the theater and the security had a letter from Denis Villeneuve that they sent to all the screenings that said, please don't reveal these things. Don't reveal this. But I mean, like, they weren't talking, there was stuff in there, like stuff at the ending that I won't even say now, because if you haven't seen it, it's worth seeing. But I mean, like I said, the fact that Ryan Gosling's a replicant, that's, you find that out in the first scene of the movie. Or that Joy, who Ana de Maris plays, is a hologram. Again, her first scene, you know she's playing a hologram because she's a hologram. There was so much that they tried to keep under wraps that nobody knew anything. And I'll tell you, that I think played against the movie because I think that would have made it more interesting. I think that would have intrigued people to come out and see it. It's a 2-hour, 40-minute movie, and it does play long. But it plays long the way a Denis Villeneuve movie plays long, which is okay. I'm okay with a long Denis Villeneuve movie. The special effects are amazing. The sound is amazing. The cinematography and the production design is amazing. It is a slow-moving movie. It's not an action movie at all. But then again, the original wasn't either. And watching this and kind of taking a chance to step back and watch it a second time, it really feels like it's cut from the same cloth as the original movie. And the original Blade Runner has never been one of my favorites, but I respect the heck out of it for all of the things that it did. And I really think that this is a worthy follow-up. And I think that this will be remembered as one of the greatest sequels made that was made 30 plus years later. I really did enjoy this movie. And the Blu-ray, of course, it looks fantastic. They have some nice stuff on the Blu-ray. They have some behind the scenes of the cinematography and the design and how they put this together and how the film came to be and the casting and all that's great, but that's very standard. The gem in the in the special features on the Blu-ray are these short films that Denis Villeneuve had done. There are three short films done by three different directors that fill in some blanks, some stuff that they reference in the film, so you can know what's been going on in the last 30 years between Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. That's the neat stuff. And they have Jared Leto shows up in one of them, and Dave Bautista shows up in one of them. So it really works. And that makes this movie fantastic and very much worth checking out and buying and owning on DVD or Blu-ray. So I'm going to have to say Blade Runner 2049, along with the special features, totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
There are a couple other movies out this week. The Snowman, Beyond Skyline, Happy Death Day, and Better Call Saul Season 3. And that is it. Please join me next week when I'll be talking about The Maze Runner, The Death Cure. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.